if you do the research, if you understand how people make decisions and run tests that confirm that or show how they respond to your product, you're going to be a lot more successful than just sitting around waiting for inspiration to strike.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get a million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today, in a word, is brilliant. Roger Dooley is an internationally recognized author and keynote speaker who's authored three fantastic books. Friction, named a top three management book by PwC Strategy and Business, and Brainfluence, which has been translated into 11 languages. He's here today to talk to us about his third book, The Persuasion Engine, which reveals how AI democratizes behavioral science tools once exclusive to Fortune 500 companies. There is so much more I could tell you about Roger, but I'm just too excited. We're going to get right into it. Roger Dooley, welcome to the Daily Helping Podcast. It is fantastic to have you with us today.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Dr. Richard.
It is my pleasure. We're going to dive into your new book in a minute. But first, I want to jump in the Roger Dooley time machine and take us back to some of those seminal moments in your journey that put you on the path you're on today.
Wow, there are so many of those. And we will have to hit the very highest points.
We'll pick the highest points for sure.
As an engineer, I graduated with an engineering degree, chemical engineering degree. Worked as an engineer for a few years, but then gradually moved into project management and product management with more marketing. And finally, hit sort of, even when I was about age 30, what I thought would be the really high point in my corporate career, I was in charge of strategic planning for a Fortune 1000 company. And so I felt I was really on the right corporate track. And at that moment, chose to bail out and become an entrepreneur. Another co-founder and I started a early mail order business in for home computers. We were very early in that industry and built that for, a dozen years and created something fairly successful. Ultimately, that transitioned into some other stuff, IT outsourcing. Along the way, got very interested in digital marketing and started a business called College Confidential with a couple of co-founders. That became the biggest college-bound website for students and parents. We sold that to the Daily Mail Group. While all that was going on, I had this sort of a hobby-type interest in the combination of neuroscience and marketing. And so I started writing about it, and that led me down the rabbit hole of neuromarketing and ultimately applying not just neuroscience, but also behavioral science, consumer psychology, to marketing better. And all of my three books are focused in that space with rather different emphases, but they all relate to that core idea of understanding how our brains work to communicate better, to market better, and be more persuasive with people.
And I love this because whether you need to market a product or service to an audience, or whether you are trying to persuade your children to do something, understanding the hardware and the software of what makes humans tick is a critical thing. So I love the conversation we're going. Any way that we get to sneak a little neuroscience into the show always makes me happy. So, and it's a very interesting combination because people, I think Mad Men probably brought marketing and advertising to the zeitgeist, right? I don't think most people really thought about it before then. But we know that there's a ton of neuroscience that goes into marketing. You know, one of the examples I can't ever unsee is I know that there was intentionality built in the supermarket, which sounds silly. But if you, the next time you're in the supermarket and you're in the cereal aisle and you're buying your Fruit Loops, take a look at Toucan Sam. Because Toucan Sam's eyes are not straight. They're looking down because some people who understand behavior and neuroscience a long time ago figured out that if those characters, like, what's the guy, the Frosted Flakes guy, Tony the Tiger and Toucan Sam, they're not making eye contact with the buyer. They're making eye contact with the children of the buyer, right? And so, neuroscience is everywhere in marketing. So I'm loving this. So talk to us a little bit for those that aren't familiar with it. Give us neuroscience and marketing 101, Roger, at a really, really high level. And then I want to talk a little bit more specifically about this great new book that you've put out.
Right. I think the basic thing that to understand that not everybody acknowledges is that almost all of our decision-making processes are non-conscious. Huge amount of research on that. According to Gerald Zaltman of Harvard, 95% of those processes are non-conscious. Only 5% are conscious. Even though if you ask an average person why they bought something, they'll say, well, they'll give you rational reasons why they did it or why they made any decision. And in fact, often it is really our subconscious mind that is deciding, and then our conscious mind is merely explaining why we made that decision, which may or may not be accurate. So, I mean, and many people won't acknowledge that. Even where it's a problem is when you've got senior executives who won't acknowledge that, and they want to market by just talking about features and benefits instead of figuring out how to appeal to the customer's brain, how they actually make decisions. But that's the whole foundation for neuromarketing, which initially was putting people in various situations, perhaps in an fMRI machine or putting an EEG cap on their head to measure how their brain is responding to stimuli like advertising and so on. And to me, that was a very limiting definition. In my writing, I always broaden that to include using our understanding of these non-conscious decision-making practices, persuasion psychology, and so on, as part of that whole thing. And you mentioned Mad Men. Everybody would like to think that they're Don Draper, where they can come up with this genius idea and have it work automatically. But really, the reality is much different. And if you do the research, if you understand how people make decisions and run tests that confirm that or show how they respond to your product, you're going to be a lot more successful than just sitting around waiting for inspiration to strike.
I love this. And again, we're building upon the neurobehavioral principles of how humans make decisions. And I think this is exceptional. Now, I am curious because, again, you said your books are kind of in this realm of neuromarketing. The persuasion engine really talks about AI in particular. So this is interesting to me because I know AI has now, in fact, I read something today about, how Netflix is using an AI engine to do all kinds of things, including get people to watch certain things. And AI is everywhere. And some people are scared of AI. Some people think AI is, the second coming. So talk to us a little bit first about why you wrote this book, because I'm curious about that. And then we're going to dig into it.
The biggest reason is that we have now entered what I call the era of neuromarketing 2.0, where what used to be really too expensive for entrepreneurs, smaller businesses, even medium-sized businesses, and even departments inside big businesses that didn't have big budgets to use. Now, suddenly, AI and a few other technology changes are making all of these tools broadly accessible and really very affordable. Looking at sort of the core neuromarketing techniques, things like eye tracking that used to be a laboratory study where you had to bring people into your lab, show them your video or your print ad, and then using relatively expensive equipment like specialized glasses or sensors, see exactly where they're looking. Now that can be done using device cams, and even more recently, can be simulated with AI with a high degree of accuracy. So instead of bringing people into a laboratory where this would be very expensive, it might take weeks to accomplish to set the whole thing up and the tests and recruiting and everything, now you can just fire up your software and run it in a few minutes for the price of a cup of coffee. So that's one aspect of the change. Another aspect of the change is that these tools of behavioral science, if you're even a small business, you can read Cialdini's book Influence. You can read Daniel Kahneman's Thinking Fast and Slow. And there's certainly a lot of other good books on the topic, but those two books alone are over 1,000 pages to get combined. That's a lot of reading to do for a busy entrepreneur, for one. And also, how much of that stuff are you actually going to remember? I mean, you're not studying it and being tested on it and so on. You'll undoubtedly come away with some good ideas, but your recall is going to be imperfect. I know my recall is certainly imperfect. And now AI can really condense all of those ideas, those experts, into advice for you. And I go into the whole second major part of the book is all about how to do that, how to prompt your favorite language model to give you advice based on the ideas of people like Cialdini and Kahneman, Ariely, and all the other folks that have had such a great impact in the field. And then the third part is something that I find really maybe the most interesting, which is that people assume that AI, the one thing it can't do is understand human emotion. And they're totally wrong with that. AI doesn't have emotion, it doesn't have empathy, but it does understand it. AI has read so much, it's read novels that are emotional, it's read books about emotion. It really understands how people react, how real humans react to various situations far better often than humans do. Last year, there was a great experiment done in Switzerland where they gave emotional intelligence tests to the major AI models of the time. They scored far higher than actual average humans did on that test. Humans averaged about 60%. AI was in the 80s. The highest one was 89% score on that test. And these were models from last year. Today's models are even better. So AI understands human emotion better than the average human, maybe better than the most emotionally intelligent person on your team. And you can use that. You know, Dr. Richard, every day I see executives make announcements, they send out new policy changes and so on that end up going horribly wrong. You know, that suddenly there's a huge customer backlash and they never anticipated that. And they should have, because when I've run those things through an AI check for an empathy audit or checking for how what the emotional reaction will be, AI almost always predicts how the real humans did react. They'll say, "Don't do this, do that." Or if you have to make this announcement, sometimes you have to make announcements that aren't pleasant. You know, you have to announce a layoff. You have to announce that your prices are going up. Even then, this can be done in an emotionally intelligent way. That explains reasons, that treats the customers in a way that they want to be treated, that at least makes them feel heard. And so to me, that is, you know, one of the biggest impacts of AI can have on business.
There's so much you said in there that's worth unpacking. The EQ piece is really interesting because a couple of years ago, and they're always updating these models, but it was a big deal that a couple of years ago, and I believe Claude was the first one to break this. Claude had an IQ score of 105, which put it in the 63rd percentile. And that was the first time in history that an AI construct, a large language model, was smarter, statistically speaking, right, than the average human being. And that was then. You know, they're predicting, I think the last prediction I saw was that by 2030, it would be smarter than the smartest person on Earth. And by 2035, it would be smarter than all the humans on Earth combined, which is, you know, now when we start talking about the Matrix and, you know, machines putting us into, you know, chambers and whatnot. But the EQ thing's interesting because that is the, I think, opinion that most people have is that AI can never do emotions. Like it'll never be a human. It can never do emotions. So this is interesting in that research that you spoke of with IQ testing or EQ testing, rather, kind of it confirms that, which is fascinating. I want to shift into part two of the book and how to create these prompts that really get at how we can really leverage AI to understand how this works up here. But I want to ask you a general question first. One of the problems with AI, and it's still a problem, not as bad as it was 3 years ago, is hallucination. I have had conversations with AI where it authoritatively is telling me X, Y, and Z. And as a clinician, I know it's wrong. And then I point out that it's wrong. I'm like, oh, Dr. Richard, you're absolutely right. Blah, 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 blah. Here's the real. So we're talking about understanding the way people think, the way they automatically and subconsciously interpret things. What can we do to shield ourselves from getting hallucinatory results that are really going to screw up whatever we're trying to accomplish, Roger?
I think there's a whole bunch of steps. I think, first of all, creating very detailed prompts is one way. Instead of just saying, what behavioral science intervention would help me convert more customers on my website? There you're going to get these sort of bland, generic, and maybe incorrect responses. If you ask for a far more detailed prompt that maybe mentions specific people like Robert Cialdini or Dan Ariely, or maybe even a team of behavioral scientists, and ask them to discuss the question, ask them to even debate it. And that's certainly one approach that I mentioned. That's not the only approach. Something else that I do, just in general, first of all, it does help to have a basic knowledge of what you're talking about. If I asked AI for advice on a field that is totally foreign to me, it could hallucinate and I might not catch it. But I think that one good effect of using AI for using consumer psychology and behavioral science is that generally it will explain why it is giving you particular advice. It'll explain the principle. In other words, if I say, how can I use Cialdini's principle of reciprocation to improve conversion on my website? It will almost always first explain what reciprocation is or its understanding of reciprocation, which you can look at and say, well, yeah, that's correct or that's not correct. But that overall, you will be learning as you go. You'll be developing familiarity with these principles and the ideas. And so it's actually instructional for you, particularly if you're not all that experienced. So that's a plus side. Something else that you can certainly do is ask it to check its work. I've found that when I am, say, looking for something and it gives me a quotation from somebody, I will ask it to verify the quotation and it'll come back and say, well, that isn't really a direct quotation. It was something that that person might have said. Well, okay, not really what I was looking for there. And also you can use other models. When I'm working on something important, I will almost always ask at least two models the same question and see how they answer differently. And then maybe probe to understand the differences. I mean, often you just get better ideas that way. I had a little project I was trying to come up with a tagline, and I tried one model. Claude is my go-to. I find I get the best results with Claude the first time around. And I got one that was pretty good. I wasn't entirely happy with it. I asked ChatGPT, and it came up with some that were somewhat worse than Claude's. And I asked Gemini, and it came up with a minor variation on one of Claude's that was absolutely bang on perfect. And had I not tried three different AIs, I probably wouldn't have gotten that. I could have probably kept hammering away saying, hey, Claude, give me more ideas. And it might not have come up with the one that I thought was really good. And of course, that's the human factor work there too. I didn't blindly take the first one or even the 10th one that any one of the models suggested. It took that sort of human judgment to say, okay, this one resonates. This one is going to resonate with people. That's what I'm going with. So the human is still in the equation, but it can certainly be a great tool for ideation. And when something doesn't seem quite right, it's important to push back. If it says, okay, doing this will help you get more inquiries about your pool cleaning business or something, and it doesn't sound right to you, you can push back and ask it to explain why, or say, hey, I understand this business and I think this, and argue with it. The biggest mistake I think most people make is starting with a very simple prompt, asking for something, and then saying, okay, well, that's what I'm going to run with. The more you make it a discussion, the more you push back, the more you use more than one model, the better your results are going to be.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go. So I'm loving this because you're saying use multiple models to kind of triangulate the information you're trying to arrive at, which makes perfect sense. Prompt engineering has become a science unto itself. So, you know, I know the whole second part of your book is how to best design these prompts so that you get the information that you're looking for. So let's talk about that. What specifically, if somebody's listening to this, they're like, yes, Roger, I want to design the most effective prompt imaginable for me. What, and I know it's different for everybody based on what their business is, but what are some of the underlying 100% have to do's in designing effective prompts?
You know, Dr. Richard, one of the things that's going to affect your results that is not directly in the prompt, but's really important, is the context that you provide. If you say, I've got a pool cleaning business and I want to get more leads, you'll get some kind of advice. But if you provide details about your business, about its typical customer, about the specific community or region that you service, about maybe past tests that you've run, what marketing has worked, what hasn't worked, the more context you provide, you're going to get far better and far less generic answers. So there's a whole art to that. I mean, go into that in detail in the book, but the more context you can give, the better your results are going to be. And one very quick prompt engineering hack that I can suggest, well, actually there's two I'll suggest. One is at the end of every prompt, just append this little question, say, ask any questions that will help you respond. And every now and then the model will just ignore that and start responding. But almost always, it'll come back and ask for questions. Sometimes they're about context. Tell me this about your customer. Tell me this about your market. Or which of these things is more important to your business and so on. And that will really help you both get a better response and a less generic response. So that's one thing that anybody can do right away today. And then the second thing that I always like to try once in a while, at least, is to start with my prompt and then ask the model, say, okay, here's what I'm trying to accomplish. Here's my prompt. Write me a better prompt. And in the book, I've got an example where I start off with a pretty detailed prompt myself. It was about 100 words, so it wasn't a little tiny generic prompt. And it came back with about a 400-word prompt that was far more detailed, far more explicit. It included a few things, like also suggested that part of the result include an implementation plan and so on. That didn't really occur to me to ask out of the gate, but those two things, the ask any questions, a little appendix to your prompt, and then asking the AI model to rewrite a better prompt, those two things will dramatically improve your results.
I love that. These are very simple yet effective things that people just can add on to what they're doing and help the LLM get more clarity on how they can help you. So this is fantastic. I want to pivot back. We touched on it briefly. The whole third part of your book, Roger, is on AI and emotion. So take us through what a reader is going to experience as they read that part of this book.
In this part of the book, I actually have a few fun sort of stories and case studies. That there aren't a lot of those in the book. A lot of it is really telling people what they can do when in a very direct way. But I had some such great stories about a couple from the cruise industry where a cruise line made a decision that caused their customers to become infuriated. In one case, they rerouted a ship for a corporate photo shoot. And not only did they reroute a ship, these were their by far highest spending, most loyal customers. It was on their Silver Sea brand, which is a luxury 6-star brand. And those people spend tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars a year on cruising. These aren't your typical sort of carnival jump on a fun ship cruisers. And they rerouted this ship that caused them tremendous headaches because it delayed their arrival in their final port where they had to catch their airplane to go home. And it delayed it enough that almost everybody would have to change their airline reservations in the middle of Florida spring break. So, I mean, you can imagine the chaos this caused and the angst. And I was able to follow the actual customer responses on social media. I read some private Facebook groups and cruise forums and whatnot. These people were ballistic. It's like, I've been cruising with these people for years, and now this is insane. The comments were just wild. And This was, a totally avoidable thing. I ran that particular decision through Claude, and the way they communicated it was bad too. It was this generic corporate speak announcement that never really admitted responsibility for anything, didn't apologize at all, just said, "Hey, this is going to be happening. If you need to change your travel arrangements, please do so. We'll reimburse your airfare cost if they're reasonable, if you get them to us by email in 30 days." It was very transactional, no emotion, all these sort of corporate euphemisms and whatnot. Claude, first of all, said in giant capital letters, "Don't do this if it's not already been done. This is going to infuriate your customers." Claude really goes to all caps, but that was pretty amusing. And then it predicted how people would react, and said, of course, these are they're expecting a seamless luxury experience, and suddenly it's being blown up in the middle of that experience. It also then crafted what I thought was a really pitch perfect letter. The original communication was absolutely tone deaf, and in fact, when I read it, I said, "Man, this is tone deaf." Claude came back and used the same term, that it was tone deaf, and it crafted a much better way. It's like, if you have to do this, okay, here's how to do it. And it apologized, it recognized the inconvenience that people were going to experience. It didn't suggest that they have a party on the pool deck during the photo shoot, which is what the original one did. Offered assistance with change fixing the reservations, because these people are, in many cases on the ship at that moment, suddenly having to get to their travel agent or their airline. And so it offered a modest future cruise credit. Now, of course, these sorts of things, obviously, a business person has to look at these and say, okay, this is possible or this is not possible. But the way it was communicated was far, far better, and would have, I think, caused much less angst and actual anger amongst its customers. So, this is the kind of intervention that AI can offer, and you wouldn't expect it, but that's it will do that.
As a human hearing the story, it's hard to believe that a company would do that and be as tone deaf as they were. But I chuckled as you said, Claude put it everything in caps. But this is a great way of it effectively becomes a PR tool in a sense, is that can manage conflict and catastrophe in a way probably better than we can.
Yeah, I mean, you see communications, Dr. Richard, like a company is really happy and announces, "Hey, we're an AI-first company." And the way they phrase that makes their employees think that, "Oh man, robots are coming for our jobs." And so suddenly everybody's feeling tremendous angst on their staff, where that wasn't the intention of the communication, but the people writing it just never anticipated this reaction. And that's I think, where AI can help. They can look at it from various angles. How will customers react? How will employees react? And tell you, and then you can decide, okay, maybe we won't do this policy change, or if we have to make this policy change, we'll find a way to communicate it in a better way.
Was there anything that surprised you as you were putting research together to create this book? Anything that you weren't expecting to discover as you put this together?
Probably the level of advice that you could get from AI was, but in both phases, in the sort of prompting to improve my marketing phase, as well as the emotional communication phase, in each case, I found the results I was getting were just stunningly better than I'd anticipated. In one case, for instance, and I said, "Okay, I'm a local pool company, and I use my local community just as an example," and I asked it to analyze the market and competitor websites to see what behavioral prompts they were using and what other, basically, it was sort of a competitive intelligence research. And it found things that were, really amazing, that, yeah, you could have figured these things out if you would have spent hours and hours going through your competitors' websites. But it did this in minutes and spotted things like, in one case, just poor design, where on every page, the one competitor had this giant form, which was kind of dumb. But also pointed out the competitor had this bizarre comparison of like our service and our competitors, which, that's maybe a valid thing, but our competitors had weird things like looking in your windows and peeing in your pool, and things that really, if you were a potential customer reading that, you would say, what is with this company? Do they really think that other pool companies are out there peeking in my windows and peeing in my pool? And instead of being something that would convince you that, okay, these guys are going to be completely normal compared to all those other wackos, it makes you think they're the wacko. AI did this competitive analysis in just a matter of minutes.
It's pretty crazy that these tools exist and that they can be so effective. Roger, this has been such a great conversation. Before we move into close, I want to give you an opportunity to talk about your podcast, BrainFluence. Share with us a little bit about what that's about and what a listener is going to get out of it.
Well, I've got over 400 episodes out there. I'm continuing to record on a intermittent basis. And basically, every one is an interview with somebody who has something really smart to say about using psychology, using neuroscience, or other aspects of evidence-based marketing to improve marketing and improve business. I mean, that's been my focus for years, and really, there's so many people out there with great insights. I've had folks, not just Bob Cialdini, but Dan Ariely multiple times, Martin Lindstrom multiple times, and there's so much great thinking out there. And that's certainly one way to get that knowledge. Although now, I think I've learned a lot from that, but probably I could have condensed some of that learning by using AI. But it's still wonderful to connect in person with these people. And I think even listeners and viewers of the YouTube videos can still get that personal connection with the guest, where they're explaining in their own words their key ideas.
It's wild now. There are podcasts that are completely created, including the discussion with AI. It's just an AI podcast, and that's wild to me.
Notebook LM is a great tool for that. If you want to understand something, then dump whatever that thing is into Notebook LM and have it create a podcast about it, or have it create you can even do videos, you can have it create a slideshow. And all of these things are tremendous learning tools. I wouldn't recommend using it to publish a podcast yourself, but in terms of learning about a topic in a way that you would learn as if you were listening to a podcast, it's really a great tool. Now, it's not perfect. It does not always get the most important ideas from something. As you know, Dr. Richard, AI still makes mistakes. But boy, as a way, you don't have time to read the book, and maybe you don't want to listen to 15 hours of an audiobook. If you can get the key ideas of that into maybe a 30-minute podcast from Notebook LM. Hey, that's a great start.
Absolutely. And speaking to getting to the most important information, we have arrived at the end, Roger. As you know, I like to ask my guests just this one question, everybody that comes on the show, their biggest helping, that one most important piece of information you'd like somebody to walk away with after hearing our conversation today.
I think of the things we discussed, the understanding that AI really does get emotion and really does get empathy is, I think, probably the most surprising finding and the most important, because we can apply that certainly in business, but not just to marketing, but in discussions. If you're going in to ask your boss for a raise, then provide the context and then ask for advice. You would be surprised at the insight that AI can give you, because it does understand emotion, even maybe negotiating with a family member, all these things. Because, as you mentioned, we are constantly persuading. Everybody is a persuader in life. Even if we're not in marketing or sales, we're persuading coworkers to do things, we're persuading family members trying to, and so on. So I think AI can help us with all of that, and use it wisely, of course, because one thing that Bob Cialdini always emphasizes, and I try and remember to do that too, is that yes, these are powerful tools, but use them in a way that is ethical, that gets people to a better place. Don't use them to manipulate people into doing things that they're going to regret. Use them to get people to a better place.
Well said. The book is The Persuasion Engine. That's available everywhere books are sold. But Roger, if people want to learn more about you, where can they find you online?
Best place to start is rogerdooley.com. I've got links to everything there, my Forbes articles, my neuromarketing articles, my books, and everything else.
Perfect. And for those of you in the car, we got you covered. Everything Roger Dooley will be linked in the show notes at drrichardshuster.com. Well, Roger, I have loved our conversation today. Thanks so much for joining us on the Daily Helping today.
Thanks so much for having me on, Dr. Richard. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely, it has been. And I also want to thank each and every one of you who took time out of your day to check this out. If you liked it, if you're excited, if you know how you're going to do your prompts a little bit differently moving forward, go give us a follow and a 5-star review on the podcast app of your choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, because the happiest people are those that help others.